Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Drugs are good in moderation.
Alright, swallow that microphone, man. So when you're buying a box for $85, that's what hurts the store.
Ultimately, I think there's just going to be more people playing Magic, and it's going to be fine. Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing good today.
Sweet. Good deal, man. Hey, 2 weeks in a row. High five.
Right? We got in there.
Seriously, man. Hey, we just wanted to remind everybody that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where any order you make over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. Greg, did you get a chance to play any Magic this week?
I did play some Magic this week.
Let me guess. You played Tiny Leaders.
I played Wizard's Tower.
Played
EDH.
Okay, nice. Hey, I apologize, man. Last episode, you'd mentioned that you played a little Modern as well. I was actually very curious about that. Did you want to maybe touch on that a little bit and what deck you were playing?
I built this deck for my compatriot Andrew, as you guys have heard before. He hasn't been
guest of the show.
But we built Titan Shift.
Ooh.
For Modern. So Primeval Titans, Valakut, and Scape Shift. And it's an interesting deck. It's a little slow. It's technical, but fun. And it was just
nice.
Playtesting against other people so they could get some playtesting.
That's really, really cool, especially with the recent reprinting of Scape Shift, kind of bringing it back into the affordable category. So cool.
Pretty much. It's really interesting because also nobody plays Alpine Moon.
Yeah, there was a lot of hype around that card and like whether or not it was going to be good. I think people are just kind of scared to use it. It seems extremely powerful in, you know, sideboards and in specific situations, but nobody's really been running it as far as I know, unless I'm mistaken. But
nope, they just aren't.
The one drop Blood Moon wannabe. Not so hot right now, but keep that in mind. If you are in the market for Alpine Moons, now might be the time to pick them up. They're probably at around peak supply. That was Core Set 19, right?
Yeah.
It shows how much I pay attention to Alpine Moon. I don't even know what set it's from. How about everybody's favorite here, Commander, Greg? Did you play any Commander this last week?
I sure did.
Ooh, did you get Bruticlad some more reps?
No, I did not play with Bruticlad. My friend played it, and he just couldn't play it because he doesn't know how to play Magic. I mean, he does, but
sure,
that's okay.
Bruticlad doesn't necessarily seem like the kind of commander that you can just pick up, you know, being a newer player and understand all the intricacies.
He just hasn't played in like 2 years.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he's
gotcha,
been stuck on that Hearthstone hype, and I don't know why he would play that game.
Oh, man. Who likes Hearthstone anyway? Gah, get out of here.
Probably a bunch of our listeners.
Well, you know what I think about Hearthstone? Gah, just to let you know. I've played it before. It's kind of fun, but I just get over it so easily.
I don't know. The problem is that game, it's gotten to be pretty degenerate for a lot of gameplay. So, anyhow. Besides that fact, I got to play some various decks. I played Nekazar. I got to play with my Kamal deck and my Zirulin deck. Those are fun to play with. But
oh, Zirulin's amazing.
Rude.
Love that card.
So rude.
I remember when that first came out in Mirage. Yeah, I'm old. And it just didn't seem like that good of a card. But then came this format called EDH. And all of a sudden that card became really, really awesome.
I don't even know how much he is right now.
Oh, he's up there. He's reserve list. But also along came that card called, what was it, Sundial of the Infinite?
Oh, yeah.
That made Zerolin just so much more fun to play.
They've but, got him at around $8 right now.
Oh, not bad.
I don't think he could ever split with my copy, though.
No.
I got real lucky, and a friend found a pair of miscut Zerolins.
Oh, you told me about those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you heard it here first.
$5.
Yeah, you heard it here first on the Win Condition. Get yourself a Zerolin of the Claw, because every time they print red dragons, this guy gets more fun.
Oh, definitely. He just gets better and better.
Oh, yeah. Yep. All right. Well, we've kind of let this intro segment go on quite a bit here, but we don't have the Guilds of Ravnica story just yet. So what are we going to entertain our listeners with this week, Greg?
Well, you know, we figured since we're going back to Ravnica again, why not go to some story and lore of Ravnica?
Well, then why don't we head on over to Lore Corner?
All right, so now that we're over here with the lore, and you guys are waiting with bated breath, we're going to talk about Argus Kos.
Argus Kos. So, Greg, I was not playing during the original Ravnica set, so you're definitely going to be way more familiar with this guy than I am. I'll give you this brief little intro here about him, and then you can dive into his history. So Argus Kos was an officer of the League of Wojek in the Boros Legion. From a young age, Kos believed in upholding the law. As an orphan, his only dream was to join the Boros and protect the citizenry of Ravnica. Kos epitomized the tough street cop archetype, complete with a drinking problem and a distaste for rookies.
Yeah.
Oh boy, we already see an Ice Cube Kevin Hart movie in the works here. So, all right, Greg, why don't you take us through the history here of Argus Kos?
So, before we get into this, just a couple things to know about Argus is that his character was the focal point of the books from the original Ravnica. Him and his dealings with another guild.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know, right? So we're going to go over the Wikipedia, the Wikia, and I'm going to go a little bit word for word from here because we're going to talk about it, and then we're going to go over what we're going to think about it. So
sure.
It starts off with him with the life in the Wojek. After joining the Boros and completing his training, he got paired with the veteran Mizzil Zunik. Of course, he would admire him and everything... since he was everything Kos hoped to become. That illusion would be shattered. The first case that he took as lead investigator. There was a Rakdos conspiracy reaching the League Hall, and the pair were dispatched to investigate. The thrill killers had been seen around warehouses in Orzhov District set for demolition. They found that the warehouses were being used as a base for the notorious cultists and gang leader Paula. Zunik was too eager to get the cultists and mistakenly attacked and killed a little girl who was set as a bait for Paula by the bounty hunter, Gerard.
Ooh. Now, this Gerard is...
The same Gerard that becomes the guildmaster.
Ooh. Okay. All right. That's interesting. That's really cool. Okay. All right. So continue.
At this time, he was a Devkurin Huntmaster, which we got a Devkurin Elf in Guild of Ravnica. Zunik went mad with guilt and grief and tried to blame the Devkurin at first, before trying to kill him for being the sole witness. Great cops, right? Justice overrode his feelings of admiration for his partner, and he tried to stop him. In the struggle, Zunik slipped off the roof and was killed on impact.
Oh, God.
It was the first in a lifetime of mistakes that would drive Kos to drink. Despite his rocky start, Koss became one of the finest investigators in the Wojak in the years to come. Though his personal life never matched his professional life's success, many failed marriages, his constant drinking kept him from ever achieving happiness outside the job. Sounds like a bad cop movie, right?
Exactly.
So, as time wore on, Koss refused to retire despite the wear and tear he took. Eventually, he was incapable of being magically healed due to the immense buildup of healing magic or healing mana in his body from a lifetime of using teardrops to heal wounds quickly. Any further use of healing magic would cause a massive heart attack. If I remember correctly, teardrops are essentially like angels' tears.
And yeah, they I can look
like
into
a
that.
Phoenix down.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you, let's see.
So while you continue looking into that, I'm going to continue on. So despite everything,
please.
He enjoyed his time on the streets, a place where he felt at home, and he had several partners in his tenure. None closer to him than the angel, Feather. What a great name to have for an angel. However, his own success would ultimately cost him his job satisfaction. Shortly after being assigned a new partner named Belle Borka, Koss was forced into a promotion, learning that Bell was meant to be his replacement rather than his partner. During his last days on the beat, though, the pair stumbled across conspiracy which threatened the entire world. Unfortunately for Borka, that discovery cost him his life.
And just to touch back on it, yes, those teardrops it said were high concentrations of mana that were applied to wounds that would heal them quite rapidly, but if used over the course of many years, would become very dangerous and instead turned into suicide pills.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
So following Borka's death, Koss began an investigation outside the Wojak sanctions with Feather's assistance. His first lead was the assassination of Saint Baiul, a notable member of the Celestia Conclave. This brought him face to face with Von Zunich, his mentor's daughter, and the Ledev assigned to Baiul's protection. So Ledevs is a cast of protectors in Celestia. Learning that Savra was somehow involved in the conspiracy also brought the bounty hunter Gerard back into his life. The further the group moved into the morass of plots and schemes, the more they realized what was at stake. It all culminated at the Deca Millennia, a celebration of the Guild Pact. Sazdek triggered his plan to kill Mott Celestia with Savra's death. He would put an end to the Guild Pact along with the ancient Perun. Gerard and Koss were able to stop the vampire's plan at the last second, and Koss arrested the Dimir Guild leader to answer for his crimes. Could you imagine Gerard and Argus Koss working together?
That's some serious Golgari Boros interaction right there.
Everything
holy
but
cow
blue. That sounds amazing,
right? And then there's Zadek there to fill in the gaps. Wow,
you see why I chose this story, right?
Yeah, no, I love hearing about the history of original Ravnica, because you know Return to Ravnica was such a great set, and now that we're diving into the lore of this so much, like I just love hearing about how some of these older characters can influence and relate to some of the newer characters that we see in the sets that are just getting printed.
Want to talk about retirement? You want me to go?
Sure. I'll take it for this section here. So Koss's contributions earned him a great deal of acclaim, but being thrown into the spotlight was more than Koss could take, and he chose to step down from the Wojak and disappear into the lesser districts of Ravnica. Koss became an Orzhov security guard in the Utvara Reclamation Zone, where he helped his old friend Pivlik. I see what Pivlik is here. Pivlik was an impish businessman in the city of Ravnica, member of the Orzhov Syndicate. Okay. So, sort of a shadier kind of guy. It was a quiet life, one well suited for an old man like Koss. But he was.
Pivlik became the primary representative of Tesa Karlov.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Interesting. So, But yeah, but he was bothered by the mystery that had haunted him since the Decamillennial Festival. The Firemane Angels had vanished, a fact that had driven Feather to abandon the city and her closest friend. Unfortunately, Koss's life was about to become much more complicated as the Baroness Taysa Karlov claimed her inheritance, moving to Udvara and spurring the Archmage Zomaj Hulk into accelerating the plot he had been secretly working on in the distant district.
With Mage Lord.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. With Taysa's organization and the assistance of the Gruul chieftain Vor Golazar and Izzet League courier Kryzizix, the group infiltrated the Cauldron to stop Zomaj, learning too late that his plan was meant to hatch long-dormant dragon eggs he had uncovered.
What?
This is crazy. Knowing that the dragons would someday grow as dangerous as Niv-Mizzet himself, Taysa and Koss replicated the spell Zomaj had used to enslave the first enormous hatchling. Can you imagine that? An army of Niv-Mizzets? What?
That would be insane.
Seriously. Taysa and Vor rode their own dragon, followed by Koss and Krix, and in an Izzet observation sphere. The group managed to kill both the dragon and the archmage, but the sphere carrying the former Wojek crashed, fatally wounding him. In the end, though, he died because of the teardrop Kryzizix used trying to save him. Unfortunately, she was unaware of his condition, and he passed away, hence the suicide pill. His funeral was a solemn event attended by his closest friends, the people with whom he had saved the world twice. Wow! Those teardrops coming full circle and eventually killing him. So, you know, shows you, drugs are good in moderation. But never when you overdose, especially on teardrops.
Yeah.
So,
one of the things I was reading there about Zomaj is that he was trying to create the dragons. Apparently, dragons of old, like Niv-Mizzet, are godlike beings. So they're very much, they could have been birthed from the original Ur-Dragon if the Ur-Dragon can walk the plains.
Right, exactly. And that was kind of what I was secretly hoping for as a fan of Niv-Mizzet myself. I was really hoping that someday he would actually earn his Planeswalker spark, but
doubtful.
I know. But that would be too crazy.
All right, so we're not done yet with Argus's story.
No, we're not.
I know, right? There was an afterlife. So even when he died, he did not get the opportunity to rest. Due to clauses in his Wojek contract, his spirit was forced to serve as an Azorius Senate spirit guard. The Grand Arbiter, Augustin IV, brought him back for the sole purpose of stopping Sazdek in his attempt to bring the last strike against the already fractured Guild Pact. Koss had little choice in the matter, and he was teamed with the Lawmage and Ectomancer, Abez Merzetti, to investigate what the vampire was doing. The first step was investigating the vampire's involvement with the Cement Combine and its guild leader, Momar Vig. Using his spectral state, Koss slipped into the Novigen and possessed one of the simplistic brutish guards, known as Virusoids. He managed to make it all the way to Vig's private sanctum before he was detected, hearing the guild leader speak of Project Kraj.
Kraj experiment.
Was left with little choice and killed the mad genius. But unfortunately, not in time to prevent Kraj from being unleashed. With a monstrous ooze on the rampage, Koss and Obez returned to Prov to inform the Grand Armorer what was transpiring. When confronted with the news, Augustin was pleased. He had known all along what Sazdek had planned and was plotting to seize control of Ravnica for the Azorius when the Guild Pact finally failed. His plans were interrupted when the Boros warship, Parhelion, a Boros warship? What?
This is crazy.
Was piloted by Saz that crashed into the Azorius Guildhall. Knowing the threat that the vampire presented, Koss entered the crash fortress and found his way to the controls. He then confronted Sazek and was finally able to trap the vampire in a grounder, a device that was meant to capture ghosts. He later throws a grounder at Agustin. Sazek breaks out of the container and kills Agustin by removing his soul.
Wow.
This puts an end to Agustin's plans to take control of Ravnica, but does mean that Sazek was loose again.
After it also puts an end to Agustin, period.
Yeah. No, Agustin's gone. There's no coming back.
It's like it puts an end to his plans, but it also just removed his soul.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So then after saving Ravnica for the third time, his spirit was brought back by Feather, who recruited him as a spirit officer for the Wojek in the newly overlaid spectral district of Agarem, where Sazdek had taken control.
Wow. So, as and maybe you're not the most interested in Boros with the with the guilds and the cards and stuff like that, but this guy definitely plays a huge role in the original story of Ravnica.
Yes.
And still exists as a spirit. So, he could come back at any given time.
Well, I mean, they say, unknown as of right now. Yeah.
Right.
Because he's a spirit. So, I mean, how is he going to die?
He is. Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. So that is quite a story about our Wojek soldier here. Greg, do you want to let us know, because we do have a card here from Ravnica. Do you want to let us know what Argus Koss Wojek Veteran does?
So Argus Koss Wojek Veteran, if I remember correctly, is a 4-drop, 2 generic,
5-drop.
5-drop. I'm not
looking 3 at red
him,
white.
So. And he's like a 2/4 or something?
3/3.
Jeez, power and toughness was the same number. Still 6. And he says whenever a creature attacks that you control, it gets +2/+0 if it's red, and +0/+2 if it's white.
Correct.
Is it other, or is it him as well?
No, it's all. So, yeah, attacking red creatures get +2/+0. Attacking white creatures
so
get +0,
attacking,
+2.
Attacking, he's a 5/5.
Right. So, definitely a great commander if you're into soldier tribal and these soldiers happen to be red and white.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's really cool. I'm kind of sad that we did not get a spirit Koss, because I think that would have been great. But we are going to be on Ravnica for 3 sets. And
we are.
As we know, Gerard has been killed by...
True.
By Nicol Bolas. There's like all this unknown certainty.
And that third set that we're going to get in this block is definitely shrouded in mystery. I mean, can you imagine if...
What if Sazdek returns? Like,
that's
a return of all of the old guild leaders that have been killed off. Just somehow Agustin shows up and is like, what?
And if you have Nicol Bolas showing up in that third set as well, he would definitely want to bring back Zadek and just somehow, manipulate him. So they might have to summon the spirit of Argus Koss to help them fight. That would just be ridiculous. That would be so cool. But we'll just have to wait and see.
We will.
Yep.
Awesome. I think that does us for some lore corner.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll leave Lore Corner here, and now we have a couple of things that we wanted to touch on. Over here in this segment, we like to call As Foretold. All right, so, Greg, you had said to me, and we'd mentioned in our last episode, that we wanted to talk a little bit about this go a little bit deeper into this whole issue of Hasbro, you know, selling directly to Amazon versus yes. selling directly to local game stores moving forward, and what that's going to do to us as the players, as well as to the local game store. So, why don't you hit us?
So as you guys have probably seen on everybody everywhere, we're all talking about it, because having Wizards selling direct to Amazon and Amazon selling boxes at $95 is already undercutting our stores. I mean, what store have you been to recently that isn't selling a box of the new set at $110? They're all at $110.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, obviously they want to make money for their establishment, because it is an actual brick and mortar store that does require rent and upkeep and whatnot. So
there is always a little bit that the store needs to make. Now, they're not going over MSRP of $140.
Right.
Because there's no reason to be that high. They're buying the boxes. But now that they can't buy the boxes directly from Wizards, it creates a price spike. So you may see $5 more. In all honesty, just pay it. There's no reason not to, because you care about going to your local store. You care about buying singles. You care about having a place to play. And I mean, even if some of those places to play are charging you $5 to be there, it's worth it, because you're getting store credit.
Right.
It's not a bad thing. It's just, don't allow this doom and gloom to scare you. I kind of just feel like this is Wizards trying to regain market share. Like right now, they're really having a hard time with pricing, because there are places online that are selling boxes for a couple bucks above cost. So when you're buying a box for $85, that's what hurts the store.
Right. Right. So, and if you can just go online and get this stuff shipped to your door for the cheapest price possible, a lot of people are going to take advantage of that. You know, those who buy like large amounts of product. I mean, myself, I like buying a box of a set when it comes out, and that usually comes from my local game store.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and wait a couple extra days that it might take for something to arrive at my doorstep when I want that box right now. And that's another thing that local game stores do have over ordering online, is you can actually walk in the door and walk out with a box, you know, packs, whatever. And another thing is also that sales of singles are also really where a lot of these local game stores get a lot of their money. Because, you know, you sell your singles to the local game stores, as I have done quite a bit in the recent past. And then, you know, they turn around and sell them for profit.
Yes.
They're making a much higher profit margin on singles than they are from boxes. So I think that it's going to get – and I think you had mentioned to me earlier, you know, the question of, is this going to get more people into local game stores playing Magic? I honestly feel like the answer to that could be yes, in sort of a weird stretch, in that you're going to have more people who are buying online, more people who are getting their cards, more people who are building their decks, but then that means they're going to have to go in and play somewhere, you know? Like, you could invite your friend over and play, you know, as often as you want, but I've run into multiple people.
Trade those cards.
Yes, I've run into multiple people at F&Ms who have said, you know, hey, this is my first time at an F&M. And I'm like, you know, oh, hey, cool. How are you liking this set? How are you liking these cards? Just trying to make them feel welcome, you know, because you want them to be able to come and play, because that's the next step up in terms of competition, is you go and you play at your local game stores, because there are prizes on the line, you know, which then brings into the whole question of, you know, promo cards and prizes for F&Ms and stuff like that. But
so here's something that I got to talk about this, because I talked about it earlier. The professor, Tularean Community College.
Right.
I know I watch him every once in a while, especially when something big like this comes around. I like to hear what he has to say, because he does talk about numbers and money.
Right.
And he has the idea of a better system for Wizards. And it's mostly an effort-based system. It's not actual product-based. And that's where they take away, like, F&M promos. and they make it so the stores can still run their events, you earn your prizes, and then you go to a GP to redeem them. Would you have a problem with that? I mean, having points that you actually earn that you can utilize to gain access to go to, I don't know, being able to play in the Pro Tour. If you had to use your points to play in the Pro Tour or to get in a Pro Tour qualifier, it means that it has a value. Now, you wouldn't be able to trade it between people, but it means that you're playing for something more than just playing.
Right.
And getting a card is all good, but it doesn't feel the same as making the points to be able to get into the event or these types of things. And I think that's a great idea, is that that's what it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you're going to have people who are only going to be playing Magic on a casual level at their kitchen table. That's fine. You know, but you are going to have quite a few people who, you know, they really, really enjoy this game and want to take their gaming to the next level. So, you know, where are they going to go? Well, GPs are few and far between, honestly.
Well,
so,
it's just they're impossible to get to, because when you've got a GP coming up and it's across the states, you're like, oh, great. Well, I only get to go
also,
to a GP once a year.
Right. Also, they're kind of impossibly expensive if you want to, you know, make a habit of it.
Or
but
playing
if,
them or, yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. So I think that, you know, this whole issue of are they going to be sold, you know, on Amazon, and that's going to kind of kill the, you know, people coming to local game stores. I don't necessarily think that that's true. It's an extra step. You know, it's going to be a little bit pricier. You may see the price of your drafts, you know, go up by just a smidge, not even by that much. But ultimately, it's going to get more cards out there, more cards available. And, you know, it may even get game stores a little bit more willing to dive into singles, you know, and create more of a storefront where it's more about, hey, come in and play and pick up singles, than it is about, hey, how many boxes can we pre-order and sell, you know? So I don't know. I don't think, like you said, it's supposed to be any kind of doom and gloom here, but I think it's interesting. I think it's good and bad. I can see both sides of the argument, but ultimately, I think there's just going to be more people playing Magic, and it's going to be fine. So
yeah, yeah,
yep. So now let's do a little experiment here. I've visited two websites for local game stores already, and saw what they're charging for a booster box of Guilds of Ravnica. The first was from an old shop that I used to go to all the time out of Berkeley, California. They are not sponsoring us, but they are selling boxes of Guilds of Ravnica for $119.99. So essentially $120.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's from their online store. Now, you can have that shipped to you. I'm not entirely sure what the shipping charges are, but I'm assuming that means you could walk into the store and pre-order a box for $120. Then I went over to Flipside Gaming, our sponsor, and they are currently pre-ordering boxes of Guilds of Ravnica for $109.99. And be sure to use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps. Save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will bring that price down to
$90,
roughly $100. Yeah, exactly.
99. Yeah.
Right. So then if, you know, you hop over to Amazon and you punch in Guilds of Ravnica. Let's see what we find here. Guilds of Ravnica booster box.
You can
buy
Prime
them.
Prime for 95.
Prime for 95.53. So the difference is minimal. You know, obviously it'll add up over time. But
if it's your local store, let's say for instance for you, Crazy Squirrels selling that box for $115, you're gonna spend that $115.
Right.
Because you want the box and you want that store to continue staying there. For me, it's Games of Conquered / Equilibrium. If I want to buy a box, I'll go there and buy it. Now, I've got a competing store locally that I don't buy from, and they're going to be the same price.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just I would rather go there than order it online. I mean, even if I could, I got people that I know. If I wanted to buy stuff, I could buy it below cost. But
yeah.
I don't.
Right. And again, it just comes down to how much do you want to support your local game store? You know, are you the one
who want to be able to play in a space that's not your home, that you don't
right.
have to worry about cleaning up?
You can't play at Walmart. You mm-hmm. can't play at Target. You know, you can't play at Toys R Us because they're closed. So there's, you know, really no other place to go to play besides your kitchen table other than your local game stores. And again, yeah. they offer competitions, prizes. So they're great. You can meet people there. You can make friends. You know, it's a great opportunity.
Develop
so
new games. I mean, play
exactly.
D&D.
Yeah. Yeah. So go out there, support your local game stores, buy local. And if you have to buy on Amazon because there's no stores near you, then that'll give you an opportunity to start building a deck so that you can go to a local game store and actually play once every so often. So,
Yeah.
Okay. Well, moving on from Wizards, Hasbro, and Amazon. What else did we want to mention in the...
I think there's something as to how Wizards should be handling championships.
That's right.
And how they should just cancel everything and give all their money to charity, right?
Well, let's take this opportunity to let everybody out there know who might not already know. Javier Dominguez is your Magic the Gathering world champion. As of this last weekend, he won it all. And
how
is
much did
the,
he win again?
I have no idea.
$100,000.
But what I also wanted to say is it is now up to us as content creators to get the word out there that this guy did it. He won. He was amazing. Is an amazing Magic player. Regardless of your thoughts on Standard or any other formats that they have, he is, you know, among the best. And he needs to be congratulated and recognized. Hopefully he can appear for interviews on a lot of other podcasts, maybe some YouTube channels. Also, I mentioned my affinity for the Game podcast last episode, but Brian Gottlieb, one of the hosts of the Game podcast, put out a tweet where he said, he basically called out Wizards and he said, it is now up to you. You need to plaster him all over your website. Yeah. You need to promote him to no end and make him the face of Magic so that you can actually get a feeling of worth and success as your world champion. And I could not agree more. I think that's a great idea. And so we wanted to do our part to say, Javier Dominguez, thank you for being so awesome and amazing at Magic. We really appreciate you and what you do. Go and look him up on Twitter. Go and look him up anywhere you can because he knows what he's doing. If you're into Magic and you like competition, then Javier Dominguez is definitely a guy you should be following.
Agreed. You know, I almost feel like we need some professional access, like for Twitter accounts. Like, I know with us, we can have the same access to a Twitter account. What if they made a pro channel?
That would be awesome.
I mean, we just started one, and I was like, hey, follow for the pros talk.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I mean,
yep.
If they want to talk, they can. If they don't have to. And it allows you to reach out to the pros and say, hey, let's do stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I think there's some options out there that can be done, and... Well, we're the ones talking about it now.
Well, there's also, you know, I know we mentioned a couple podcasts that we like to listen to last episode, but there's starting to be more and more podcasts of actual professional Magic players. There's a podcast, God, I forget what it's called, but it's done by Sam Black. I believe, is it Brad Nelson? Or Mike Sigrist. Oh, God, I forget which one. And then Paulo Vito Damodarosa. And that is an extremely competitive podcast. I feel like they need to have either more of those or one that is specifically dedicated to pro Magic. and they continually bring on people who are successful in the professional Magic scene to get that interest out there, to get that information out to other players who are pursuing that pro Magic career. You know, we did talk a lot about Jerry Thompson's protest last episode, but I have a feeling that somewhere in the near future, with all this community involvement, there will be some changes.
Oh, yeah.
And there will be incentive for people to want to pursue playing Magic at a competitive level.
And that won't cost them an arm and a leg, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, also, especially with the introduction of Arena, I think I might have said something when Arena first got announced that Wizards might be moving specifically completely to Arena for competitive events.
I got
events.
Something to bring up. I just saw a post today, this morning, on Tumblr. And there were more people watching Arena than there were people watching Hearthstone.
Yes!
Yeah, 29,000 people watching Arena yesterday.
That's, you know what?
But
Greg,
then again, yesterday was Guild of Ravnica streamer day. So there was a planned event where everybody was out there streaming 24 hours straight.
You know what this means, Greg, is the fact that the Silver Showcase was a shining success. And we were all wrong.
Oh,
it did everything. It did everything
that
Wizards wanted it to do.
Don't tell me that.
We were so far off base. We got picked off. And, they knew what they were doing, you know? So,
I'll give them that. They knew it for once.
Yep.
Getting those Hearthstone players in on it was worth it.
Yes. Yeah. And so, anyway, that is extremely exciting. I'm very happy that Arena is taken off, and I can't wait to actually be able to play it. For the love of God,
I'm sorry that
please
computer won't run it.
Make it available on Mac, iOS, or PS4. Any of those, I'm down.
Hey, you know, open beta started yesterday.
Yeah, for what, PCs?
Well, Master Race, bro.
Jesus. No, get out of here with that. I'm not convinced. Like, I want it on all cross-platform. Look at what cross-platform play is doing for small little tiny games like Fortnite. I know this is kind of a tangent.
PS4 just unlocked cross-play playability.
Yes.
For Fortnite.
Yes.
I know.
Wizards, look at what you can do with Arena is having. Give it to us now.
You got to remember something with iOS.
Sure.
And Apple products.
Uh-huh.
All of them. Every single
thing
you
run. Tread
lightly
here,
buddy.
Yes.
Everything you run goes through Apple.
Uh-huh.
So Wizards right now is able to produce everything and just put it out for PC because it's easy. It's quick. They're able to do updates immediately. If they release it for the beta to Apple, they can't do updates anymore.
Well, yeah, I'm obviously it's
coming. Trust me. Just like winter.
I'm not okay, God, and that's gonna when that gets here too. Holy cow, that's gonna be something else. But yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm just sitting here chomping at the bit. I cannot wait to get on this Magic Arena, and someday it'll happen.
I sold a couple cards and bought a laptop that can run Arena.
Oh man!
It also made my recording ability better too. So
there you go. Nice.
Do the same.
I know. Maybe I'll look into that in the near future, especially with this new position I'll be getting. Hopefully, I'll be making a little more money, which will be nice. But unless there was anything else you wanted to talk about in this segment here, Greg.
Well, there was one thing that I did want to bring up that I'm pretty sure we didn't talk about last week.
Sure.
Masterpiece Collection Redemption.
Masterpiece Collection Redemption. Whoa. Hit me. Tell me about this, Greg.
All right, so as you know, there's a Planeswalker Masterpiece Collection, right?
Right.
You can only get it on Wizards' website.
Right.
Wrong.
No. Oh, you're right. I heard about this. Go.
Boom.
Go. Say it.
So you're going to be able to buy these, pre-order them from Channel Fireball, and pick them up at a GP only. So right. they're trying to increase GP participation. Well, this is a great idea, but the fact is that now this $250 set, $250 for 8 cards, is worthless. Because the proposed idea of what it was is that we were going to get, 10,000 copies of this that are going to go right. out into the world. And now, if they're going to be redeemable at GPs, there's at least 25,000 to 50,000 of these, which means these cards are going to be worth maybe $20 each.
Yep.
There'll be the card value plus a little bit, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I still want that Duretti. I don't own one.
Nothing's wrong
and I want
with
that one.
That's
so maybe I'll only have to drop $20 on it. Yeah.
But this makes it so it's really awkward for Wizards because I don't know if they're trying to flood the market or if they want to watch it fail.
Well, we'll just have to see.
We know it's going to sell out of their online store, but GP pickups, do you really think it's going to be that big?
Depends on your GP attendance.
Exactly. Like, if you're getting a GP that's barely got a couple thousand people, and only a few of them want to spend the couple $100, then there's the other question is, will you be able to redeem tickets for it?
Right. Well, and if you do,
then you get a dollar amount on tickets, and that creates a really slippery slope.
Well, because you can get into a GP function without having to enter into the main event, right? And just kind of peruse and walk around. There's no door charge yet. So people are going
to... There is a door charge. But it doesn't go to the
It goes to the event center or wherever
it's
being held at. It
goes towards your hotel, your car, your travel fees, things like that. Okay.
Right.
There's a cost to get there.
Right. I mean, there's people who go to GPs just to hang out and do things like play games of EDH or play side events or visit vendors and sell and buy cards. So there's a lot of different things that you can do at GPs. And now it seems like by them throwing these exclusive products in there that you can only get at GPs, then they're just still trying to up the ante, you know, get more people there. Because obviously if you're walking in the door, you're spending money on Magic, and Wizards is seeing that, Hasbro's seeing that, everybody's, you know, seeing all that stuff. So I think that's very, very interesting. There's just been nothing but criticism coming out based on all these BioBox promos and these new Masterpiece Planeswalker series.
Do you see how much the Worms BioBox promo is at right now?
No, how much?
They're $26.
I told you 4 of standard stompy green decks are going to be using this and just crushing people. It's going to be another Nexus
but,
of Fate.
But this
it's going to be
speculation
worse.
Speculation card.
Yeah.
So,
oh, for sure.
I mean, how much did Fire Song and Sunspeaker
Dude,
release
that at? Came out at around $20.
Exactly.
When that was
and
first
And how
done.
Much is it now?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
8.
Okay. Well, hype, right? That's what Wizards feeds off of is hype, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's what everybody who buys these cards before they even come out feeds off of, right? Is hype. Unless you're buying a box. There you go.
Then you're not buying into hype.
Right. Well, I remember when Dominaria came out, I bought 2 boxes, flipped one of those Fire Song and Sunspeakers for around $20 value in trade, and was very, very happy about that. So, you know, just know when cards are shifting price. And that's a whole other conversation that we won't be going into right now. But anyway, so we're excited. Guilds of Ravnica is coming out this weekend. It is Friday tonight.
Whoa. It doesn't come out this weekend. This weekend's
a
pre-release.
You can get your pre-order boxes this weekend, though.
But it doesn't come out this week. You know what's next week?
Next week is release weekend.
What else is next weekend?
Next weekend is
GP Mexico.
GP Mexico is on the tip of my tongue. There,
and
you go.
I should mention it is Guilds of Ravnica sealed.
There we go. Nice. Hey,
so
also
go out there, pre-order your box, get yourself ready, and go.
Yep. And I'm gonna go ahead and say again. I'm gonna backtrack and repeat what I said a while ago because I'm still thinking this is gonna be something. With the guilds and new legendary creatures coming out every couple of months, I'm going to go ahead and think that Mox Amber may have a place in standard moving forward.
Have you seen how much it is right now?
I did just pick one up for $10 the other day. I don't know how much it is right now, but
it's about right. Eight-ish.
Yeah, and it's been there for a long, long time. And remember, there was that blue artifact deck in standard that came out, and all of a sudden you couldn't find Mox Ambers anywhere. And then all of a sudden they're starting to trickle back into the marketplace because of, you said it, hype around a deck that was supposed to be really good. It is good, but I think that with the with multicolor legendary creatures coming out, and we still have a whole nother Ravnica set, two sets to come out, you know? It's going to take is a two-drop, like, I mean, obviously we have Selesnya this time, but can you imagine if there was a artifact-based... Orzhov. Not Orzhov. It would have to be Izzet. Simic. Okay. Something where maybe Mox Amber could come down and actually make a difference. I think that that card could actually see some play. So, not to mention Brawl. You know, Mox Amber in any Brawl deck is already good because you're going to have a legendary creature or a planeswalker in charge. So, yeah, that's right. We still support Brawl here. We love it. So, anyway, all right. Well, Greg, I do want to try this out. So, briefly, why don't we jump on over into the Brewmaster's Lair?
Where's Poe?
Poe is exactly where you left him. So you don't have to look too hard. But what we wanted to do today, instead of sharing a deck brew with you, is we wanted to pick a card and just maybe start getting your little your brains ticking about how to potentially...
I mean, your brain's already ticking about this card.
It really is. It really is. And I'm very excited about it because there's been a lot of talk about a card from Guilds of Ravnica, a certain Black Demon 5-drop. Yes, that's it. You guessed it. The card I'm thinking about is Doom Whisperer. For 3BB, you get a 6/6 Flying Trample Demon that has the ability Surveil 2. I'm sorry, Pay 2 Life, Surveil 2. So...
it's pretty good.
It is. And if you're unfamiliar, Surveil is a new mechanic, a Dimir mechanic specifically, that says you may look at the top X cards of your library and then put them on either top of your library or into your graveyard. So Surveil 2 means look at the top two cards, put one, two, or none either on top or in your graveyard. And that's that. No mana cost, just pay 2 life and do it. So, Greg, have you heard of this card before?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, everybody speculated on it to be the best card in standard replacing Scarab God because ultimately it's doing the same thing.
Sure. Yeah, it's...
except you get a flyer.
You do, and it's bigger, which is pretty crazy. And it's one color, too. It's not even, you know, blue and black.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was looking at this card, and I was thinking, like, okay, obviously it's just powerful in and of itself. It's great. But what other cards are there potentially in standard that can make this card do absolutely naughty things? So the first card...
Is it Overgrown Tomb?
Ooh, that does, you know... Unleash black mana, which you can use to cast this. And you can surveil Overgrown Tomb into your graveyard that you can then play with your Crucible of Worlds, which is also standard legal. But I was thinking more along the lines of a certain card from Dominaria called Lich's Mastery.
Wait, I haven't heard of that card. What does that card do?
Well, you need to listen to another wonderful podcast called Top Level Podcast with Patrick Chapin and Michael Lopez. But anyway, it is a card that costs, It's an enchantment, a black enchantment that is 3 black, black, black. And it says, number one, it has hexproof. And it also says you cannot lose the game as long as it's out in play.
But what if I want to?
It also says whenever you gain life, draw that many cards. Whenever you lose life, for each one life you lost, exile a permanent you control or a card from your hand or graveyard. When Lich's Mastery leaves the battlefield, you lose the game. So, just with Lich's Mastery and Doom Whisperer in play, it doesn't immediately seem like a knockout, lights out, you know, kill combo here. In fact, it doesn't. But what it does allow you to do is when you surveil too, you can put both of those cards directly into your graveyard. So that when you do activate the surveil mechanic and you lose 2 life, you can exile those 2 cards from your graveyard, which can essentially create an infinite loop. Well, not infinite, because you're going to run out of cards in your deck, but you also can't lose the game. So between life and not having any cards in your deck, I got to think that this can set the stage for some really busted combos in standard. I mean, off the top of my head, a certain Biobox promo. Nexus of Fate. Why couldn't I think of that? Yeah, if you were to surveil yourself down to just Nexus of Fate and keep taking turns and beat face with your 6/6 flyer or have some other manner of speaking to somehow do some damage, that could be a pretty ruthless combo because, you know, you get your demon on 5. And then your Lich's Mastery on 6, you could potentially win the game right there.
You could.
All is said and done. But anyway, it just got me thinking, like, this whole Doom Whisperer card has so many potential synergies in standard that it's just it cannot be a bad card. You cannot not see Doom Whisperer moving forward here in standard. Obviously, with the Golgari mechanic, its name escapes me right now, but it relies on the number of creature cards in your graveyard, and that can combo very well with an ability like Surveil. That other card that can bring back a card with a mana cost 1, 2, and 3 straight to the battlefield can be great with Surveil. I mean, there's so much potential for combos here with Doom Whisperer that I just wanted to mention it on the cast, get all of you thinking about it and potential ways to break it. I mean, we're talking about standard alone here. I mean, that's not to say you can't use it in modern or EDH or any other format too.
Well, I still think Ad Nauseam's better for that.
Ad Nauseam is pretty good.
But
yeah.
Things you could do is, like, let's say you're playing Narcomoeba Bridge deck.
Okay.
And you do Intervention Pact.
Yes.
And then you surveil your deck into your graveyard.
Sure.
And then you, like, Dread Return your Flaming Flamekin, and you swing out for lethal. The question is this a better technique than using, other Dredge tactics?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, if you surveil that Narcomoeba into the graveyard, that's putting it right in play, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which could then trigger your...
Bridge from Belows.
Bridge from Belows. What's that blue, black, Shadows Over Innistrad guy?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he is. Yeah. No, all the good Dredge cards. This card is so amazing. I really, really hope to open at least one in the box that I get, but if not, it is definitely a fun card to think to brew around. So and then comboing with Lich's Mastery, it just seems like there's something there that has to be broken that someone's gonna figure out. So
it just might be too late to play for, like, competitive.
Yeah, that's true, because
it's great in casual.
It is great and casual. And the fact that Lich's Mastery has that hexproof is so huge, because you do get that new green card that has the 3 modes when it enters the battlefield. It can be a Reclamation Sage.
Yep.
There's just so much targeted enchantment removal. There's no sweeping enchantment removal that we may finally see Lich's Mastery able to take over. And if it's a mono black deck, you could finally see that Cabal Stronghold you know, able to produce some mana. You might even see Josu Vess come in as a finisher.
Man,
there's so much good mono black stuff out there right now. I know. But anyway, we'll have to see what all those minds can come up with brewing new decks moving forward here.
Yeah.
So anyway, that'll about do it. That's kind of all I wanted to do here in the Brewmaster's Lair. But anyway, anything else you wanted to touch on, Greg, before we start getting on out of here?
You know what? No, I think we've pretty much covered what we want to cover.
Agreed.
I don't have a rock, so I guess I don't lose.
Oh man! Oh, and also, I just want to make a point of trying to shout out other content producers or podcasts or whomever else is out there. Another podcast I love listening to is the Spike Feed. You can find them on MTG Cast Network as well as just subscribing to them directly.
Wait,
so
they get rid of 1/1 counters to gain 2 life?
You know what? You know what? I think they do. I think they do. So, if you're interested, go ahead and grab your V-neck, throw it on. Watch or listen to the Spike Feed because they're a great, great couple of guys and their banter is awesome. And they do have a focus with Legacy. They do love Legacy. So, and they talk video games too, which is great.
Oh, so, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So anyway, also, let's remind everybody that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming, flipsidegaming.com, where you can go and order your Guilds of Ravnica booster box and save 10% off your purchase with that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. Greg, where can all our wonderful listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter under NewsFlasher2003.
You can find me on Twitter at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. Check us out on Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, all the wonderful places that you can download your podcast from. And all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Always, always a pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all soon.